This is a replay of the Thursday night, January 4th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. But I can see already we've gone with the dogs. Our first story is about a golden doodle named Cecil. Cecil was doing fine until he ate $4,000 in cash on the couple's kitchen counter, who owns Cecil. And apparently the couple was able to salvage $3,550. You can imagine how they had to do it. Yeah, I don't know. Is it worth $3,550 to do that? But apparently Cecil is a 7-year-old golden doodle, and he normally is well-behaved. But in this case, I guess irresistible to him was a bunch of $50 and $100 bills. And this was in Pittsburgh. The couple apparently withdrew the money because they had been planning to do something with it. But before they could, Cecil had dinner. And the couple was in complete disbelief because they said, "Swear to God, this dog has never touched anything in his life." Yeah, suddenly, right, exactly. Suddenly, she hears her husband say, "Cecil's eating $4,000. Yeah. And so they, sure enough, they found out shoot-up bills were scattered throughout the home. Those were the easy ones to reclaim. And they actually got about $1,500 that way from the money that the dog managed to not consume. But afterwards, after calling the veterinarian to make sure that Cecil wouldn't die, the veterinarian said, "Well, what goes in comes out." And so it was that after the fact they donned some some surgical gloves, well, probably more like kitchen gloves, but nonetheless, and had quite the smelly job. But apparently they reclaimed almost all the money. Yeah, and the bank will take it back. Now that's the most interesting part. The bank says, "Oh, this happens often." How often? Yeah, well, apparently they say as long as the serial number is intact on the bill, you absolutely can, in fact, recover the money. So if that's the only thing that's left, you can go in and exchange it for cash that hasn't been consumed by a golden doodle. So, oh man, the sadness of pet ownership all the way around. And I read this one article. It was a dog forced to wear a muzzle starts to cry because he can't pick up a stick. And I said, "What is this about?" And sure enough, it's one of the many laws, regulations, and such that have come to pass worldwide over quote-unquote bully breeds. Bully breeds are not breeds, as you probably know. They fall into several categories. And, just like pit bulls. Pit bull themselves is not a breed, but it might be an American Staffordshire or what have you. In any event, there's a new controversial ban on bully breeds in the United Kingdom. And among the different regulations is if you're trying to keep your bully breed, you must have them on a lead and a muzzle anytime they're outside. Then by February 1st, you got to register. And so here was the story about this poor woman and her 14-month-old bully, who forced to wear the muzzle, and he doesn't understand. And so it is. But what's really sad is this woman may lose her apartment as well, because the apartment owners are saying we're not going to rent to anybody with, and you see that occasionally in rental contracts where they won't take this breed or that breed, which is really unfortunate, because it's less about the breed itself than about how the dog is socialized and how responsible the owner is. That's not to say, sadly, that breeds that come under the pit bull banner aren't very often bred for fighting capabilities, which can lead to something in the line. But again, it's less that and more socialization. And I look at what's in the shelters, stateside, even here, almost every other dog or every dog in some cases is some form of a pit bull breed. And again, with good dog ownership, this shouldn't be a problem. And the sad part is the dogs, maybe more than most breeds, want to please their owners, which, of course, is also how they get into trouble. But nonetheless, here we have the concerning rise in attacks. But any dog can, in fact, turn its, responsible dog ownerships. But in this case, they looked at, in Great Britain, 23 deaths in the past 3 years, and they said, that's it. And by the way, of those 23 attacks, they weren't all from bully breeds by any degree. So you've got more and more people, they're a danger to the community, especially to children. And there you have the latest on that. And really sad when you paint that brush with a swath to the point that it outlaws the dogs rather than, in fact, does something to the owners who are irresponsible, which you would think that was the deal there. All right, so enough of that. It's an interesting topic because anytime I bring it up, invariably there are people who are, you got to get rid of them all, and other people who are more along the lines of, don't you dare pick on my dog. And so it's evenly split. But again, I think it comes down to the responsibility of the owner, just like anything else. All right. So what is causing consternation in various parts of the world? Well, you knew it was going to just drive people crazy, especially when they're in Naples, Italy. It was the church nativity scene that featured two mothers of Jesus rather than Mary and Joseph. Yeah, well, I won't even talk about the furor that was created from that, but there are some things that you know you're going to get attention to say the least. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And apparently we also have already, the year is just starting, and already we have sad farewells. Dwayne the Rock Johnson's tearful farewell. I'll always be your proud and grateful son. Yeah, Rocky Johnson. So that was the deal there. Died. I thought that was last year, though. So, or longer than that. But no, it says that it was just the other day. Well, there you have it. So 888-876-5593. Like I say, I got the tabloids, if all else fails, and a number of other stories that might get you, well, at least interested. Let's go with that right here on WGN Radio. Can't eat a bite. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the Sand Band. They're from Pinehurst. Beach music. In fact, this week's Beach Music Top 50, the Sand Band is number one with that song, I'll Come Running Back to You. Not real new for them, but it was actually Johnny Goen who has suggested I look that up. And what's interesting, it's a cover of the Sam Cooke song, but it is, I guess actually there's been several people who copied I'll Come Running Back to You, but it is so different from the Sam Cooke original that it took, you know, when I heard the lyrics, I said, now wait a minute. And then I realized, oh yeah, well, talk about different.
Folks say that you found someone new to do the things I used to do for you. Just call my name, I'm not ashamed. I'll come running back to you. Can't sleep at night.
Yeah, doesn't sound like the same song to me, but there are the words, and yes, indeed it is. You know, Bill Cook wrote that. No relationship to Sam Cooke whatsoever, but Bill Cooke, in fact, also before the show, I thought, yeah, let me play some Bill Cooke. He was on WAAT, and he was just terrific. Well, of course, you know the chance of me finding that air check anywhere online. He had the show Musical Caravan overnights on WAAT, and AAT was an interesting little station in Newark that it was around from the early 20s. It was one of the first stations, and it moved around on the dial like so many of them, and then it wound up on 970 after the Narva Agreement of 1941, and had been a variety of things, including Top 40 and country. In fact, had a country history a couple times, and even in the early 50s, but then later in the 60s, they were WJRZ, which was country, and then Top 40. Yeah, they when they were sold to Pacific and Southern, they became WWDJ, 97 DJ in Hackensack, which was good timing because it was right around the time that WMCA had dropped Top 40. So here comes WWDJ, and they had everything going for them except a signal. And they did fine in Jersey, to say the least, but it's when they started looking into, Queens or Kings County, that wasn't going to work out too well for them. But nonetheless, long before that, Bill Cooke, this guy was such an influence, and he had a television show, too, after a while. The WAAT radio show became so big that they gave him a television show, and I'm trying to think of the name of that. It was on Dumont. That's right, actually made it to Dumont, but I'm trying to think of the name of that because that name was used again, like in the 80s, for a television show, and it'll come back to me. But in the meantime, rest in peace, Bill Cooke. But yeah, you wrote it, and he also wrote You Can Have Her. Yeah, and was the person who found Roy Hamilton. So yeah. Okay, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh, but I digress, as I always do. And we have Elizabeth in Rock Falls, along with Mr. Chubb. How's Mr. Chubbs?
Hi, Raleigh. Well, he was barking his head off this afternoon, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I finally came to the back door here, which is a big French door, and here is a huge black and white dog looking right inside the house.
Oh.
And he hung around, and of course, bark, 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 bark. And finally, I saw a pickup truck pull up next door, and the man called to him, and he ran over and jumped in the truck. But Chubbs was having an exciting afternoon.
Well, it seems like maybe he and the black and white giant there could maybe have a play date.
I don't know. I was afraid to let him out. He had to go, but I was afraid of my husband.
Exactly, but if you can get to know the owner, I mean, that may be good exercise for Mr. Chubbs.
I tried to see where he went, and he went down the road and then turned the corner, which would be the neighborhood kind of in back of me.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know anybody back there, so.
All right. Well, anyway. Excitement for Mr. Chubbs. All right.
It was. He's still looking for him, in fact. He's standing there looking.
He's lonely. He needs a friend.
He does.
Yeah.
What I called about, Raleigh, was I read about some research from Johns Hopkins Neurology Clinic. Uh-huh. And it said that listening to music is a total brain workout because music is structural, mathematical, and architectural,
Yeah.
And our brains need to work hard to process music.
Yeah.
And it's best to listen to all kinds of music. Unfamiliar artists, unfamiliar music, every direction you can go, because that makes your brain work harder.
Yeah.
And it reorganizes itself and makes new neural connections.
Right, and it can jumpstart your creativity. And right. It also can cause long-buried memories to resurface. And that's why I always say, when it comes to music, some listen to remember, some listen to forget.
Because I've heard some music that, it took me back to something I didn't want to think about.
Yeah, well, right. And it does that sometimes. No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. It can be powerful. I think more than anything else, I believe music, sociologically, it doesn't lead, it reflects. And if you want to know the makeup of any culture, listen to the music of that culture, and you'll get a lot of information from that.
I never thought about that, but that's true. Yes.
So, they've done a lot of, for many years, experiments with plants, for instance. And I'm sorry to say that plants like classical music, so I'm going to have to differ from plants. But they seem to specialize in really liking that. But there's other music that plants recoil from, and plants absolutely are reactive. I mean, they put fire near a plant, and man, the people who do that kind of research, they go nuts. So, and I don't blame them, where can they go? But, music is very important. So,
I played a lot of Mozart for my grandson when he was a baby and growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really helped his brain because he's on the very high end of the autism spectrum.
Uh-huh.
And I think music really helped his brain grow.
Yeah.
And then when he was in school, he was in percussion in the band. And that also, that beat of the percussion, I think that really helped his brain, too.
Oh, and absolutely,
I can see how it would help us older people, too, to make our brains a little more agile and our mood better and our memory better.
I don't think I would have wanted to participate in the Johns Hopkins study. I read this about this, and the part I read about is how they had dozens of performers, jazz performers, rappers, improvise while lying down inside an MRI machine. And the doctors kind of watch to see which areas the brains light up. No, I don't think so. But it is in fact structural and mathematical, and based on a note relationship. So of course, yes, you're absolutely right about that.
And if it's the right kind of music, I think it helps any anxiety, or I think it even lowers blood pressure.
Oh, yeah, that's what they say. Yeah. And there's a number of devices now that are based on music that, I've got Bob tonight, and he is a stickler for sticking to time. So you and I are talking, and we're not on the radio, but that's the way it goes.
Oh, okay.
But, hey, it's just you and me and all the people who are on hold, and nobody else gets to hear this. So. Anyway, give Mr. Chubbs a big hug and a woof for me.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Fine.
So that's where we'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Darling, I found out a long time ago. Found someone else. I'll keep on loving you year after year.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Johnny Adams. That's the first time he recorded I Won't Cry. Yeah, Johnny Adams, the Tin Canary, would have turned 92 tomorrow, born in New Orleans in 1932. And Mac Rebinac, Dr. John the Night Tripper, was heavily involved with him, produced a lot of his stuff, including his biggest hit, probably Reconsider Me. But what's interesting is that I Won't Cry in 1959 came out on Rictic, which was Ed Wingate's wonderful Detroit label. And I assume he must have gotten the master, because I don't think that was recorded at the Rictic Studios. And there were Rictic Studios. Yeah, I remember that. It was 3240, 45 West, or 46, right around there, West Davison. And then what was interesting is Berry Gordy from Motown bought Golden World, which was one of Ed Wingate's labels, and that meant Rictic stayed with Ed, and I believe he put it in his bedroom. I'm not making that up. But at the time that this came out, it was definitely at 3246 West Davison in Detroit, just in case you were wanting to drop a line. I'm sure the buildings are all demolished by now. Joe is a first-time caller. He's in Naperville. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh Jane, I'm thrilled to be talking to you.
Glad you called. What's up?
Well, Raleigh Jane, I'm probably your youngest listener. I'm going to go out on a limb. I've been listening for a long time to your program, and you're absolutely fantastic. I love the show.
Well, thank you, thank you. So how old are you?
I'm 16.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm getting up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm an amateur radio personality myself. I was wondering if I could get your advice on a few things.
Oh, my pleasure. So are you doing your own podcast?
That's the goal. It's kind of in a limbo stage at the moment, but hoping to get there.
Yeah, it doesn't take any money. You can do that for free. Now, that doesn't mean anybody's actually going to hear it, but, you know, it's other than the investment of your time, that's all you got to worry about.
Sure. Yeah, so how did you start out on the radio? I know that you were in Colorado.
Well, yeah, I was in my 40s in Colorado. All right, and I've mentioned this before. Radio got into me, I didn't get into radio like most kids who were fascinated by it. You know, in grade school, I knew it was what I wanted to do. And, of course, there weren't any role models of women. The only women that were on the radio back then were, you know, like the neighbor lady doing restaurant reviews or recipes or things like that. And so, in the idea of, you know, going to be a top 40 disc jockey, well, women just didn't do that. So I got jobs doing anything I could get hired to do. And then after a while, two things happened. One was I went and got my first class license, which they don't even have anymore, so you don't have to worry about this. But back in the day, if you were on a directional AM station, you had to have a first class FCC license to do the meter readings and all that kind of stuff. So I had one of those, which helped. And then as time went on, because I got a lot of jobs in radio that were off the air, you know, like doing traffic, you know, scheduling commercials and things like that, or, you know, production jobs, but not on the air. The Cuban Missile Crisis broke in 61, and they needed board ops for the Cubans because the Cubans couldn't get licensed. So, of course, that was an easy way to make money for a while, just run the board. And I always laughed about that because the general managers would say things like, well, make sure they're not trying to overthrow the government. And my famous line to one of them was, I can't even stop them from urinating in the wastebasket. How do you think I'm going to do that? And well, do your best. And as time went on, I was working for a station, and the first words I ever said on the radio, I mentioned this before, there was a commercial, and they needed a woman for the commercial. It was for the Stay Dry and Uretic service, which apparently stopped kids from wetting the bed, and I don't know how. But the line that I had to say, my debut radio line, was, Sue, I don't know what to do. Timmy's wet the bed again. And so it started there.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what else do you want to know?
Well, I always struggle with trying to find my flow state while I speak, trying to get into the rhythm.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about that. Radio is not an art. It is a skill. In the real sense of the word, it's a skill. It's like learning to play the tuba. You can read all about the tuba, know everything about the tuba, but until you sit down in front of the damn instrument every day and blow wind into it for years on end, no music comes out. Well, it's the same thing for radio. It is a practiced skill. Now, once you've developed that skill, and once it's at home to you, you know, unfortunately, I've developed it too well, I forget there's a microphone in front of me. But once you develop that skill, at that point, that's when you can try to develop an art out of it. But whether you make it an art or you don't, it starts out with first mastering the skill.
Sure.
So do it every day. You know, I mean, do whatever you can. Read stuff aloud, you know, whatever causes you to enunciate is fine. Do record intros. You know, you don't have to even be taping them, but practice.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I got to work on.
Yeah. And you just do it every day. And no one else has to hear. You can record it if you want to. And that's the nice thing about it today. There's so many easy ways to capture anything. It's not like you got to go out and buy a reel-to-reel recorder.
Right. Yeah, it's very convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the upside. The upside is that there is no shortage of ways to be on the air, you know, with a podcast or what have you. The downside is, of course, there are millions of them. So how does yours stand out from the crowd? But you don't need to worry about that yet. Now, the other thing I would say is if you truly want a career in radio, I don't know why, I think you should have your head examined. But if you do, what you want to do is get to know people. I do not believe in all the 32 cities I lived in and the over 50 radio stations I worked at. I don't believe I ever got a job where I didn't know somebody. Now, knowing somebody, as far as I'm concerned, is necessary but not sufficient. You can know everybody in the world, and if you really don't have the goods, if you don't have any talent, it doesn't matter how many people you know. But the problem is there's a number of people who have a lot of talent that really don't know anybody who they're not ever going to open the door. So the more you can do to amass a bank account of contacts, the better off you are.
Gotcha. Get to know as many people as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, I used to fool the phone company back when phone calls were expensive. They're not now, of course, but back in the day. And hell, I'd call program directors all over the place, and they could be in minor markets, they could be anywhere. I mean, I was just absolutely determined that I was going to get to know everybody.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, you've given me a lot to think about.
Yeah. Well, it'll start with just do it every day until you're comfortable doing it. And then from there, you'll know what you got.
Sure. Hey, thank you so much.
Good luck. Keep me posted. I want to know when I can hear you, Joe. Sure. All right.
Definitely.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So, yes. We'll be looking forward to the Joe from Naperville show, hopefully coming to a computer near us soon. But that is the nice thing. Anybody can in fact, get online, do a show. Why not? And miracles happen. But at this point, when you look at the top podcasts, I still say scratch the surface and there's a terrestrial connection there somewhere. Yeah, we haven't eclipsed that completely yet by any means. 888-876-5593. James is Oregon. What's going on tonight, James?
Hey, good evening. I was going to talk about dogs and Epstein, but I got interested when the lady with Mr. Chubbs was talking about music and stuff and how it affects people. In 2019 and 2020, I was living in an assisted living home in Nashville, Tennessee, and it just happened to be on the grounds of Belmont University. And they would come over, their students would come over, and they would have music therapy classes for people.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, there were people from their 60s to their 90s, and they're almost 100, you know, in that place. And they would come over maybe once a week to do that, or they'd come over periodically, play music like at the dinner time or lunch time, stuff like that. And that, in fact, before I left, I was they wanted to raise my rate, so they kicked me out. But I was talking to the one of the, not the director, but one of the nursing people there, and the doctor, about getting with Belmont and maybe teaching the people in there how to play guitars or violins or. Mm-hmm. Instruments like that. I thought that would be a good thing, and they they thought it would be a good thing, but then when COVID hit, of course, that shut everything down.
Yeah.
You know, but so anyway, yeah, I can see where she was going with it, with John Hopkins and that saying that.
Sure.
You know, they're trying to do that. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
If I can real quick about dogs, I found out, because I always owned homes for a long time, that when I rented, they give you a list. You wouldn't believe how long those lists are of dogs that you would not believe that they would not allow in.
Yes. Yes. And it's, you know, again, it's so unfortunate because it is not the dog. Again, a responsible owner, if you decide you're going to have a bully breed, a responsible owner understands that there is in that line a history of violence by unscrupulous breeders. So it exists, but it also exists in St. Bernards, for God's sake. So it really comes down to responsible ownership, not breed.
Yeah, because I couldn't believe, because we had a dog I got at a music store. It was as a pup, and it was we found out it was a cross between a shepherd and a chow.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and he was the nicest dog. Kids could climb on him and play with him and all that. And then if he didn't want to be bothered, he'd curl his lip up a little bit and get up and move away. But he wouldn't snap at him.
Right.
But, we had a swing set with a slide in it, and he'd climb up the slide with them and go down the slide with the kids and stuff like that. You know? And then because he's chow, he has some of the characteristics, and his tongue was not purple, but he had spots.
Right, of course.
He had spots.
Of course.
Yeah, and the kids would always like that. They look at his tongue, you know.
Now, chows are interesting. They're not good for a first-time owner, that's for sure. They can decide that they're going to be the pack leader and become dominant, but it requires a lot of early socialization, a lot of exposure to kids, a lot of exposure to people outside the family, because by nature, they want to be very protective of their immediate family. And so in order to make sure they don't attack the neighbors, you want to socialize them and expose them to things early on. And when you're talking about a cross, like a chow and a shepherd, there's a lot of possibilities. And again, most of them can be handled very well with responsible ownership and early socialization.
Yeah. But this one was a good dog. And now he stayed real close to my wife, because anytime she'd get up, he'd be right behind her. Mm-hmm. And the vet said that they'll attach themselves to usually one.
Yeah, that's right.
One person in the family, and usually that's who feeds them.
Well, right, and it's interesting that they're not necessarily the dog that's going to be most likely to want to be cuddled and all that. They're independent, they're strong-willed, but on their own terms, they absolutely will handle it and let you cuddle them. But as a nature, they tend to be more aloof. My favorite description of the chow is that it's a cat and drag, and that probably is fairly true to a degree, because it does have very cat-like tendencies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that was my comment about the dogs. The other thing is I know you were following the Epstein thing and that for a while.
Oh yes.
They're coming out with names right now, but the thing is, the names they're coming out with, I've heard them already. Most of them.
Well, and some you haven't, but the other thing is to remember that in addition to his predilections, which are now infamous, this guy was, a financier and a political player. And so when he's offering, a plane ride to RFK and his family, that doesn't necessarily mean they're anywhere near underage girls or necessarily any girls. Yeah. So you have to put that in perspective. That was clearly a side of Epstein, but to look at everybody who ever logged a plane trip with him, that's insanity.
Yeah. But I mean, I was expecting to hear some names that I didn't hear, and most of the names that they're coming out with right now are names that we've already heard.
Well, because they're the big names, and so that's why the news media is choosing to use them, because, you know, they're the attention getters. But if you look at those lists, you'll see a lot of names, and a lot of them you're going to say, who the hell is that? You know, because it's not necessarily people who are well known. But sure, if you're doing a newscast and, you know, you can put Donald Trump or Joe Biden or something like that in the headline, you're going to get more coverage than if it's, you know, Daniel Smith.
Yeah, that's true. Then the interesting thing is, I heard, like, on another talk show, they said, what happened to the ones about the in Boston with the military leaders and politicians and stuff? That kind of got swept off the table, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these things are weapons of mass distraction. They get everybody talking about it, and it has, you know, very, very little meaning in terms of the bigger picture of what's really going on and the things that we will not cover on this show. But, you know, you've got everybody on those lists from, like, Yitzhak Perlman to John Glenn. You know what I mean?
So what was that guy's name that was disabled guy who had a real high IQ?
Right. Yes, the guy who wrote A Brief History of Time. Right, exactly. Who had
his name.
He had ALS.
And he's on there. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah, he left his wife for his nurse, actually, that guy. But I'm trying.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did. But I'm trying to John came in last night and mentioned him, and I said, "Yeah, I know." But now I can't even think of his name. So he came right in to tell me all about it, and I knew, and now I don't. But he wrote A Brief History of Stephen Hawking.
Yes.
Hawking. Yeah. So you know, the other is that these planes flew to a number of different destinations. The idea, they call it the Lolita Express, that they were all going to this island in the Caribbean loaded with nymphs. Not necessarily.
They just caught a ride across country.
Right, In fact, even his pilots under oath said, you know, several, I never saw anything like that. And I would think that's probably true. So, you know, you're that much of a player, and you're that much in the news, and you got this plane, and you're or multiple planes, and you're you have contact with these people. You know, I don't know. I never hitched a ride on Jeffrey's plane, but I didn't know Jeffrey. But if I did know Jeffrey, I would have been happy to.
Yeah, for free ride. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why not? So I just don't think the names mean anything.
A lot of celebrities that own their own airplanes, from what I've heard, a lot of times they loan them out to other people if they're not using them.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, depending, there's all sorts of timeshare agreements involved, too, that's not only necessarily a loan, but maybe some income. But, you know, I think that, again, this is great for the 24-hour news cycle. Oh, we can talk about this. But in the scheme of things, I think it means utterly nothing.
So, well, I like it. You know, I know it's not politics, but it's interesting if you hear a real conservative talk show and they're talking about all the Democrats on there, and they kind of don't talk about the Republicans.
Well, and vice versa.
And then you hear the vice versa.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that they're playing the talk hits. And in all cases, they're preaching to their choirs. You know, people who aren't on the same page aren't listening to those shows. So it's that simple. So, I'll have to get, I haven't bothered to get the list and look at the whole list, but I would assume that it's virtually everybody. You know, you're that much of a bon vivant, as it were, and you know this many people, and you got this plane and maybe multiple planes, and you're going places.
Yeah.
Hell yes. Yeah. You know, I don't understand guilt by association in this case.
No. I heard one guy was talking about it, and he says, until he finds out who really did what and what went on then.
And you never will. And it's ancient history. This didn't happen last week or last year or last decade.
No.
So
not if John Glenn was on there. No.
Right. That's what I mean. So I would think that I guess we've run out of things to discuss. You know, hopefully we don't get another earthquake, but something that would offset the news clock might cause this to be on the back burner. But short of that, I guess you'll hear about all the A-listers. I don't know who decides if you're an A-lister either. All right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting stuff. I'm sure it'll be in a tabloid near me soon. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Talk to you later.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye. And we'll devour that, no doubt. And we'll devour stories from James, too, and hopefully calls from you right here on WGN Radio.
Mama, 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 guess what your little boy's done? Whoa. Mama, 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 guess what your little boy's done? Yeah. I found me a girl, we are having lots of fun. Oh boy. We've been out romancing, dancing to rock and roll. Yeah. We've been out romancing, dancing to rock and roll. Oh boy. You ought to see me and her trying to do the snow. Oh boy.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, New York World's Fair. It was Wilbert Harrison in 1964, and it really was not very memorable all the way around. But what I was playing before the news was The Other Side, and I thought that had absolute promise.
Mama, 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 guess what your little boy's done? Whoa. Mama, 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 guess what your little boy's done? Yeah. I found me a girl, we are having lots of fun.
Well, regardless, it didn't bring back Wilbert Harrison's career, who was known, of course, for Kansas City in the 50s. That came out in 1964 on Constellation, Ewart Abner's Chicago label. So, Wilbert Harrison would have turned 95 tomorrow, born in Charlotte in 1929 and died in, I think, also in North Carolina, not too far from there, when he was just 65. He had a stroke in 1994. So rest in peace to Wilbert Harrison. All right, WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh will do it to it. And that gives us James on the South Side with his 4,832 stories today. How's it going, James?
My phone's having its issues, but you hear me all right?
Well, right now we are. I guess we have to talk fast. We don't know how long it'll last, but you're good now. All right, so story of the night.
Well,
I've decided. I've did my own executive decision on this is a couple that only had 25 cents left lost their life savings of $62,900 after buying $30,000 in gift cards from Target. Firstly, you wonder who'd sell them $30,000 of gift cards, but this started out, according to the victim's daughter, with an email from an account purported to be a Geek Squad employee directing the man to stop a $450 charge, and then went through a bunch of things that caused the guy to buy $30,000 worth of Target gift cards. Now, let's just hold up there. We don't even need to hear the rest of the story. Who in their right mind would buy $30,000 worth of gift cards on the basis of an email or the basis of anything? And who would sell it to them?
Unfortunately, it takes all kinds of people.
I'm assuming the guy bought it online. I don't know, because I just can't imagine a clerk at Target would say, sure, $30,000 in gift cards. Here you are, sir. I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, Okay, one other thing. Okay, the earlier the story about the Dwayne Johnson's father.
Yes.
Apparently, here's the problem with that story. Apparently, whoever posted that story posted it 3 years late.
Well, that's what I was saying when I was reading it. I was saying, wait a minute.
Let's just put it this way. The Rock's father basically passed in 2020.
Right. Right. Well, that's what I was saying when I was reading the story. I said, wait a minute. This happened. And I think he died outside of Tampa 3 years ago. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the problems, of course, with online stories. It was dated this week. I said, that's one of the problems with online stories. It was dated this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then we have the Delta Airline passengers who were on the plane for 15 hours and then slept in military barracks after their flight made an emergency landing in Canada.
Oh, that was just sad. It's almost as if you're getting punished twice.
Well, right. And when we say landed in Canada, we're not talking about Winnipeg or Toronto or Vancouver. We're talking about Goose Bay. And, I don't know, that's about 1,200 miles from Detroit where they plan to land. And it's in Labrador, home of the half-hour time zone, where they had a population of 8,000 and apparently nowhere to house these people but the military barracks.
There was one really kind of broke my heart story about this. This woman was supposed to hand over her children to her husband. This was like, you know, their custody
right.
thing where they do, where one parent in a divorce settlement where
right.
one where the children are to be at, with one parent during a Christmas time. Apparently she couldn't. She said, no, I'm not having it. She ended up killing two of her two young.
Oh, God. Oh, I hate those stories. Absolutely hate those stories.
It's
and
bad.
You do hear that, unfortunately. And, sometimes it's patricide, sometimes it's matricide. But either way, parents saying, well, you can't have them. I'll kill them first. Just horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way to make that okay. What was interesting about going back to Goose Bay here for a moment is that, you know, these days, the flight, people are busy using their handheld devices and everything else when they're on board. And so one of the passengers was coming home from Europe, you know, and she was checking her little device and the plane was en route to Detroit and everything else is fine. And then an hour or so later, she checks and it's not going to Detroit anymore. And so she's now saying, why aren't we going to Detroit? And, you know, half the cabin's getting upset and no one's answering the questions. And apparently it was a de-icing problem on one of the engines. But you would think that that at that point the pilot would notify the cabin of what's going on because enough of the cabin do have these devices. And, of course, the problem was, de-icing. They figured, okay, we'll just land it. We'll fix the problem. We'll take it off again. Well, they couldn't take it off again. And why couldn't they take it off again? No, it wasn't technical or anything like that. It was the crew reached their maximum time limit on board. They had to fly another crew in at another plane. Unbelievable. So, yes.
Yeah, that's sad. Also, there was the one where there was also the plane where, somebody got into the engine.
Oh, I did read about that and died. I didn't really understand what that person was trying to do because he was a ticketed passenger. So I don't know. Yeah, it's as usual, people behaving badly, or in this case, just crazy. All right.
Yeah.
Well, as usual, wonderful
yeah,
stories.
It's sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
and in the holidays, I think even it just gets magnified.
Oh, of course it does. Of course it does. Now, what about 600 North Korean nationals who were deported from China? That's the end of the story. We have no idea where they are.
Okay.
70% are believed to be women. Where are these people? Mm-hmm. Apparently everybody's too busy looking at the Epstein list. I don't know. Oh, I think James' phone has come to get him. Well, I appreciate all the stories, James, and he really does. He sends so many stories, and they're all appreciated, especially on nights like tonight when you're not calling. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, and like I say, when all else fails, I've got the tabloids. Yes, and like I say, plenty of stories of people behaving badly, and you just hate to hear them all. But you will probably if you keep listening right here on WGN Radio.
He reached in his pocket and he flashed a quart and hollered, "Rave on, children, I'm with you. Rave on, cats," he cried. "It's almost dawn and the cops are gone and let's all get Dixie Fried." Now Ben got happy and he started raving. He jerked out his razor but he wasn't shaving. And all the cats knew to jump and hop, but he was born and raised in a butcher shop. He hollered, "Rave on, children, I'm with ya. Rave on, cats and cry. It's almost dawn and the cops are gone. Let's all get Dixie Fried."
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. That's Sam Phillips. Sun Records, of course. Dixie Fried, 1956. Carl Coe wrote it. And Sam Phillips, of course, the owner of Sun Records, would have been 101 tomorrow. Yeah, born in 1923 in Florence, Alabama. Died in Memphis in 2003. Respiratory failure. He made it to 80, though. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff out of Sun. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. Now, for those who are asking, and yes, I get questions, on the next Law of Abundance check, well, the date for the new moon is next Thursday at 5:57 in the morning, and that's Chicago time. So, with that in mind, probably before you go to bed, Wednesday night before you go to bed, waking up Thursday morning, write your Law of Abundance check, if you are so inclined to do that. And, of course, you can go to MarianneWinkowski.com and find out all about that. Today, by the way, you know, every day has holidays, and to this point, I've still not been able to ascertain exactly how they are immortalized or, it's a big word, never mind, or in other ways codified to be official. But nonetheless, today, only one. It is National Trivia Day. I have no idea from which that comes. Yeah. Tomorrow, only one event also, National Bird Day. I know you don't want to miss that. I don't know exactly how they're celebrating, but something tells me it won't be eating. So, 888-876-5593. And as I say, when all else fails, I do have the tabloids. Yeah, we've got the Inquirer. In fact, looking at... this issue is actually a couple weeks old now, I realize, but maybe you missed it. Britney's TV tell-all terror, given Justin the jitters. Of course, if you read a couple magazines after that, you find out that, no, the big problem is that that Britney's beside herself again, and her mother's looking at how to save her. But in the meantime, we also have as the big headline, Scientology's darkest secrets exposed. Yes, celebrities used as stooges, fast cars and easy money. And what really happened to Miscavige's missing wife? Yeah, Shelley, what did happen to her? I don't know that we'll ever find out, and I doubt the tabloids have told us, but that's one of the many stories we'll read in this particular issue of The Inquirer. We have Kim Kardashian, who it's required that she be in every tabloid, of course, and in this one, fears of brain damage. All right, you can read that to figure out how that occurred. And the biopic, though, that I was saying about Britney, apparently there's supposedly going to be one. Now, I haven't heard, actually, about anybody who is forking over cash to do this, but they say that it's being shopped around, and she doesn't have any choice except to grab an offer. And so she's got nothing coming in, and she won't be performing concerts again anytime soon. So a biopic. And you supposedly have a bunch of A-list producers who are after her. And so far, people in her universe are quaking. Yeah, all right, fine. What else do we have? We have, let's see, Blue Bloods, Bleeding Out. Yeah. And that show's been popular for forever. And always lots of fans. But the word is that apparently it got canceled because of good old dollars. Yeah. And it has been canceled. I read that elsewhere. Too much money being paid on that. So I guess you get another reality show. I don't know what they'll replace it with, or lesser known actors of some sort. What do we have? Prostitutes and pillow talk. All right. So what's the tie-in here? Well, apparently, feds fear fat cats spilled U.S. secrets to flesh peddlers targeting the elite. All right. So it's, I guess it's Jeffrey Epstein late here. And the Inquirer has found out that the honey trap has endangered many of America's safety experts, yeah, or whatever. And military secrets, yeah, loose-lipped. All right. So we have, by the way, absolutely no facts, near as I can tell, associated with it, but a lot of good allegations nonetheless. What else do we have? Mariah's beau bails over diva demands. Yeah, I did not know Mariah had a beau one way or another, but apparently Mariah Carey not only inflicts bad Christmas records on us, but apparently tales of her toy boy lover, who is suspiciously absent from the opening performances of her new tour. And apparently he's taken a powder to protest her demanding ways. All right, so what else do we have? We got Chris Rock and Olivia Wilde. Yeah, she's desperate for him, supposedly. Bad boy Diddy dodges a bullet. Yes, quickly settles with ex-lover suing him for rape and abuse. So apparently those were shocking allegations. There was a $30 million lawsuit. I wonder how much he had to pay. I don't think that's in here, but it has settled. So yes, that's right. Slime from the checkout line. These two could be yours, because what happens to these tabloids is they get mailed out as prizes. I know. But you get a certificate too when you win on Monday Night Trivia, so it's not just a tabloid and a DVD or CD or something like that. We have Rachel Ray, hoping to conquer the world through kindness. Or food, I guess in this case, feeding the hungry in the Ukraine, and that would be in Ukraine, and now helping devastated people rebuild their homes after disasters. Well, hell, she'd be on her way to Japan right about now. We have Phil Collins spending his final days in misery as his money-hungry ex-wife, Oriane Savay, is auctioning off his once-cherished belongings. All right, and who's buying? I don't know. We have... RFK widow's sad final days, matriarch Ethel tormented as the clan is ripped apart. Yeah, so RFK, of course, in the news because he's running for president and has his own views on that. So we have Nudie Carol Alt. Well, how big they are, how hard they fall, I guess. Carol Alt was really, as far as models go, the it girl back in the day. And, we're out of time. Even better.
Her head rolls back and forth against the billows of her long black shiny hair as she contemplates the ecstasy of some other love that now she wished was there. If she could only realize that the love I have could beckon her command. Instead of laughing endlessly and pushing back advances with her hands. Every night I see her leaves a nightmare of illusions when she's gone. and it leaves a longing feeling in a man with the pain that lingers on. The gaudy goodbye can't replace the girlish giggle of her sweet hello. But tonight I've made my crumbled mind up that I'll never ever let her go. Too many nights I've watched her tease by shifting all her weight from hip to hip. And with her hands brush back the falling strands that covers up her satin lips. She struts upon the stage and her fallen victims are calling out for more. But she leaves them stranded helplessly and exits to her dressing room door.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. That's Roger
tonight
Miller.
Yeah,
not the usual fare really for Roger. Nice. He didn't write it. Actually, Kenny Price did. Yeah, and Jerry Kennedy produced it in Mercury, 1971. And the deal is that Roger Miller would have turned 88 this week. Yeah, sadly died way too young. Lung cancer, 56 years old in 1992. Truly missed to this day. All right, so a variety of things, but now I'm hesitate to bring this up. I should start off by, well, actually no, I should just bring it up. Let's discuss this. This probably doesn't count unless you're old enough to have been fully cognizant at the time the Beatles hit stateside. All right, so unless you were old enough to think, basically, we'll put it at that, in say 1962, you probably don't qualify for the discussion. But if you are, then I want to know. I have a burning desire to know. And John and I talked about this last night, and I said, you know, honestly, I have thought about this for years, and I don't have the answer. I've seen a lot of people who've written about this, pontificated about this, and all that, and never have I heard an answer that really resonates. Now, you know, the other night we were talking about how the heck did the Beatles come up with all this great R&B, and I think the answer I got about Brian Epstein's family's record store makes all the sense in the world. So I can sleep peacefully now knowing how the Beatles glommed on to things that otherwise they wouldn't have heard. All right, but this is what I want to know. All right, obviously the Beatles started in the late 50s, if you will, the Quarrymen and all that, in Great Britain. And by 62, 63, they are very popular, certainly in 63, in Great Britain. I mean, hugely popular at this point. It's almost Beatlemania, if you will, there. And, of course, stateside, there no one knows who they are. Now, there were three or four different record contracts stateside. Swan, for instance, had She Love You, and nothing happened to that record. And then VJ on their subsidiary, Tolly, they put out Please Please Me. Now, to tell you that that record got no airplay would be an absolute lie, because Dick Biondi in Chicago on WLS played the heck out of it, and it did absolutely nothing. So it's not a case of, well, these records just didn't get distribution and they were never heard. No. No, in the case of Please Please Me especially, or, you know, in the platter poll that Murray the K had where he pitted Love Me Do against Lover's Island by the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays won. You know, I mean, these, so you got New York, you got Chicago, where you've got known airplay and absolutely no real traction whatsoever. Now, again, if we were talking about some little AM daytime station in Gary, I'd say, all right, well, nobody heard it. But this was heard, and nothing happened. So here comes December 26th, the Capitol releases I Want to Hold Your Hand. And by the way, here's the deal. A lot of people say, well, why did Capitol sign them? Well, actually, they didn't, not exactly. What had occurred was that the Beatles were a product of EMI in Great Britain, and there was talk about why they chose that. But anyway, they did. And Capitol, of course, bought by EMI, so it's a co-ownership deal. And the way it worked was that because of that co-ownership deal, Capitol got the first right of refusal on any product, and they kept passing on the Beatles. And that's why, as I mentioned, that VJ wound up getting them, not asking for them, not wanting them, but they got them on the back of signing Frank Ifield. And so I figured, what the heck, we'll release, you know, they released a couple things. Here's Please Please Me. Here's here's Dick Biondi playing the heck out of it, and nothing happens. And so when EMI reclaimed the Frank Ifield contract, they initially forgot to reclaim the Beatles contract. And that's how VJ was able to keep the releases going for a while. But I digress. All right. So here's December 26th. And for whatever reason, this time Capitol says, all right, well, we'll release I Want to Hold Your Hand right after Christmas. And this is a terrible Christmas season, because this is right after the Kennedy assassination. This is when Phil Spector pulled his Christmas album. I mean, this was not a happy time. So here comes this record. And by the first week of January, this record is heard on the air, I Want to Hold Your Hand, like on WABC in New York. Scott and Muni played it, and WMCA. And normally, when you're saying WABC picking up on a record, it's usually after small market stations or whatever. So in this case, they went on it fast. I don't know why. But here's the part I don't understand. Please Please Me does nothing. No one cares about this. I Want to Hold Your Hand is released. And within 3 weeks, it's the biggest thing of all time. You know, here comes Ed Sullivan, who's going to be booking him on the strength of this. It's only out in the States 3 weeks, and already he's booked him for a February 9th show and all this. But so the question is this. What changed? What sociologically changed? Because you can't tell me that I Want to Hold Your Hand was a significantly different record than Please Please Me, for instance. And also, when I Want to Hold Your Hand took off, of course, immediately we have Capitol releasing Meet the Beatles. And, of course, BJ puts their stuff together with introducing the Beatles. I'll get to that. John says, you forgot the jukeboxes. But that's the other thing. I Want to Hold Your Hand. Where does it go number one nationwide first? Cashbox. And where is Cashbox getting its tally? Jukebox operators, okay? Why are jukebox operators suddenly ordering this record in big numbers? And so this is the part that I don't understand. What changed? You know, and nobody has ever been able to give me a definitive answer on this, and I would love to know. So if you have any thoughts soever, please tell me, because we've, you know, every time it comes up, I think to myself, what changed? And I have absolutely no idea. And I've heard a lot of different conjecture, most of which misses the mark because it's just not accurate for the times. But what would it have been? And, you know, there are probably people with whom I could have sat down and had this conversation years ago, and I never did for whatever reason. And now all of the people who might be in a position to give me more info than I had are no longer alive. So what did it? What do you think? 888-876-5593. All right. Then the other thing, last night I saw a clip of an old Ray Stevens show, and John had no idea who Ray Hildebrand was, and so I was telling him about Ray. I said, well, Ray was a college kid in Texas, and he and Jill Jackson formed this duo, and they put out a little record that Shelby Singleton heard that he was going to release on Mercury, or one of the labels, and Shelby said, but, you know, Ray and Jill just doesn't get it when the name of the song is Hey Paula, so you guys need to be Paul and Paula. And that's how Ray Hildebrand became Paul. Well, what I was telling John is, you know, the interesting thing about this is that Ray, in the middle of a Dick Clark Caravan of Stars tour, you know, One Too Many Nights on the Bus, quit. I mean, just quit. Found the Lord and quit. True story. And I had said to John, I said, you know, I wonder who Clark replaced him with, because that part of the story I didn't know. So I thought, well, I'll bet you there'll be something online about this, because there's something online about everything. So I go to look it up, and sure enough, I see two or three stories that mention that sure enough, Ray Hildebrand walked out of that tour. I mean, I remember that like it was yesterday. In any event, I knew he walked out, but all of them claimed Dick Clark replaced him. Now, they didn't say replaced him with whom. The way the sentence was written made it seem like Dick Clark replaced him. I guarantee you Dick Clark did not appear as Paul on half of the Paul and Paula records for half of that tour. Who was it? And I don't have any information on that either. I'm sure somewhere in the archives are who, what poor unsuspecting soul did Dick Clark team up with Jill Jackson to be Paul to her Paula on that. But it was, yeah, halfway through the tour. And originally, Paul and Paula were going to go out on one of those Caravan of Tour shows right at the time the Beatles were hitting. But what happened was the tour was going to take off, I think, at the 1st of December, you know, be the Christmas holidays and all that. And then the Kennedy assassination, it just put a kibosh on everything. And so that stopped. But then 2 years later, here comes the tour. And here are Paul and Paula. You know, it's been a little while since the hits, but they're out there. And I don't know. Was it one too many nights on the bus? Can't tell for sure. But while we won't ever know that answer, since Ray is no longer with us, who was he replaced with on that tour? If you have any idea, let me know about that too. In the meantime, now that we have tackled the big questions, I mean, let's get down to it. We've settled the world affairs at large, so it almost pales by comparison. But I know you'll be pleased to know that it's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stays.
Hitchhike. And in fact, he was singing that in 1965 on American Bandstand, right about the time that they were scrambling to figure out who would replace Ray Hildebrand on the tour. And so it was. Supposedly, Dick Clark stood in for Ray Hildebrand. I can't imagine it. And if that's true, God, I wish there was film. Yeah, I would just kill to see that. Yeah, that's, to me, it just can't be right. Something in the translation, something got confused there. But if you know differently, tell me all about it. But that was a very big Caravan of Stars tour in 65, played everywhere, including Elkhart, Indiana. Yeah, but like Brian Hyland and Linda Scott and Jerry Clanton and the Essex and the Jaynettes and the Ronettes and Little Eva and the Dixie Bells and Dale and Grace and Joe Perkins, Little Eva and Emmy, and Donald Jenkins and the Delighters were on that tour. Yeah. Native Girl, the Dovells, the Times, and Paula without Paul at some point. But so Dick Clark stood in for him. Oh, man, why on earth couldn't there be film of that? Yeah, no, that would be a reason to watch YouTube. But I still doubt it. And maybe you have an answer for that, too. I don't know. So all the things that you wonder about late at night. You know, some people are concerned about what 2024 is going to bring. No, I'm worried about what was happening in 1964. So it's easier all the way around. 888-876-5593. We have another hour and 5 minutes to go here. And don't worry, I won't. John always says, just play more music. No, we're not going to turn it into a music station, though I have the tendency to want to. But speaking of radio stations, they came up with a list, as the radio trades will do every year, of how many stations are airing what format and how it went right now versus a year ago. And country remains number one in America. There are currently 2,164 full-time country radio stations in America, which is a loss of 14 stations over the year. Now, number two, what do you think it is? I'll wait. No, whatever you said, the answer is no. The number two format in America is preaching and teaching. That's right. We're not talking about contemporary Christian. That's a different category. We're talking about, give me that old-time religion. Now, of course, in the case of owners like Salem and stuff like that, it's give me that old-time religion mixed with a bunch of talk shows as well. So I'll leave it to you to what the mix really is. But the number two format is religion, the teaching and variety format, which has gained 31 stations this year to have 2,036 stations. Now, granted, maybe 2,000 or AM. No, who said that? All right, number three, interesting, down from number two last year at this time, is News Talk, which has lost 14 stations. And there are currently 2,005 full-time News Talk stations in America. Number four, here we go again. Contemporary Christian. Now, if you added contemporary Christian and teaching and preaching together, you would have by far the number one format in the United States of America. So what comes right behind contemporary Christian? Spanish. 1,282 station. That's a gain of 12 stations over a year. Now, the next format, I would really need a lot more information to understand what they're doing with this, because it makes no sense to me. So all I can figure is it must be a dollar a holler block programming and infomercials. Why do I say that? Because the number sixth rated format in terms of number of stations broadcasting it is variety. You tell me what that means. 1,228 stations. They've lost 11 in the last year. Now, what's interesting is here we've got the top six so far, and other than country, we don't have any contemporary music that you might be listening to. Well, number seven, arguably not contemporary either, it's classic hits with 1,201 stations, and that's differentiated in ways that I can't fathom, but you might know. Number eight, classic rock with 640 stations. By the way, classic hits gained 10 stations in the last year, and classic rock gained one. Now, coming in at number nine is sports, down four stations, 631 stations. And number 10, interestingly, top 40, gained six stations at 593, but compare that to country's 2,164, and oh my, talk about paling by comparison. So I will try to find out what variety is, Hal. I believe, I'm almost positive that they mean block programmed. So you can bet that these variety formats are predominantly AM radio stations that are, like I say, selling infomercials. But I'll verify that for you. And whatever else is on your mind. And again, as I threaten, I've got the tabloid. So, I'd much rather be talking to you, though. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-RALEIGH. And if you want to weigh in on my sociological question about the Beatles, I'd appreciate that. And if you can substantiate that Dick Clark really did fill in for Ray Hildebrand, I want to know that for sure. All right, so plenty of things to talk about, but it would be much better to talk with you about it. So 888-876-5593 right here on WGN Radio.
She's here, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, thank you very much. Granny, they're expecting you. You're a little late, so come right this way. Start right in, okay?
What? Say it now.
Yes.
Say it now. Yes. Me and the Ohio Player gonna tell you about a worm. He's the funkiest worm in the world. Okay, say it, fellas.
There's a worm in the ground, yes it is.
That's right, that's right.
6 feet tall.
In the band.
He plays guitar without any hands.
guitar and start to pluck. Everybody wants to get up and dance.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. The Ohio Players at their finest, as far as I'm concerned. Funky Worm. Well, Greg Webster of the Ohio Players would have been 86 today, born in 1938 outside of Cincinnati in Hamilton. He was their drummer, and he was the last surviving member of the original Ohio Players lineup. Died just a couple of years ago, actually, January 14th of 2022, 84 years old. But other originals were Clarence Satchel, who died, sadly, 85 years old. I mean, 55 years old. I'm sorry, 55 and 95. And Ralph Middlebrooks also died young of cancer. And Vincent Thomas, cancer. And Robert Ward, he died, wow, it's been a while, 2008, also young. And Cornelius Johnson and Leroy Sugarfoot Bonner and Marshall Rock Jones, and of course Walter Juni Morrison. So you got a lot of Ohio Players there, and Greg Webster would have been the last, and so that's the deal. Died 2 years ago next week, 84 years old. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And other things that I'm pondering. Yeah, from the What Were They Thinking category. Now, firstly, it was Bob who's keeping us on the air tonight. So, Bob in Master Control, who had mentioned that I should try FARC.com, if nothing else, for the headlines, which is he's absolutely right about that. There's some fine things as far as that goes. And so, one of them that I glommed onto, the cruise is canceled, except for me. And I thought, well, what is this about? All right, so here we have it. Statesville, North Carolina. There is a tour owner, Carolina Blue Tours, owned by Charles Johnson of Statesville. And he apparently has scammed elderly townspeople out of $25,000. And this came to light because an 83-year-old woman told deputies, went to the Iredell County Sheriff's Office, told deputies that she and others had paid for an Alaskan cruise. And the day before they were expected to set sail, he canceled and he wouldn't give any refunds. Well, what's interesting is he never booked any reservations, well, except for one. He booked one for himself and he went on the cruise. So he's now facing 6 felonies of obtaining property by false pretenses, their deposits and all that. So when I say I can't imagine what people are thinking, unless he's planning never to come back from Alaska, he's never going to return to Statesville or you know, back in the lower 48. How was he thinking he'd get away with this? So I have virtually no idea. I don't know when he's coming back, but when he does, he faces 6 felonies. But yeah, so what could they possibly be thinking? And that's the category for that. And there's so much in that genre, if you will. And there was another one I saw here that was interesting. Oh yeah, how to get out of jury duty? Well, Apparently, Kayla De Pena didn't want to be on the jury. I guess she caused a mistrial because she was trying to get out of jury duty. A 26-year-old Florida woman went from juror to defendant after being accused of lying to the court and causing a mistrial in the resentencing of a convicted killer in an attempt to get out of jury duty. And so far, are you following this story? Because I'm not. During the jury deliberations, Kayla De Pena told the Orange County Court in Florida, Orlando area, she had discussed the case with a friend and said it would impact her ability to be fair and impartial in deciding a possible death sentence. So she was charged with contempt of court at the time. And on Thursday, she admitted to the judge she lied about discussing the case in an attempt to weasel out of further jury service. A different juror in the previous case said she was upset about missing work. And the jury was called back in the room, and the judge said they'd be sequestered for the night and all that, and then went back to the deliberation room. And then at that point, when she found out she's being sequestered, she asked to speak to the judge, and she said, before she walked out, though, she said, well, I'm about to make a mistrial. Okay, that's where it's a little too much information. So she'd been called to deliberate for the trial of an individual found guilty of a 2012 killing of a 19-year-old and who was originally sentenced to death 11-1. So here she is. You wonder, with all this, how she ever got on the jury to begin with. But she did, and you'd think that she would have come out, if she's, you know, this creative, she'd come out of an excuse before she is, in fact, on the jury. Maybe she didn't know she'd be sequestered. But yeah, if you're going to go out there and lie to the judge to get out of jury duty, for God's sakes, don't tell the other jurors. So that's another one where you say, how on earth? Yeah, and then we have another fine headline here. And these are the kind that that you say, I want to read this story when the headline is, normally that kind of thing only happens at Taco Bell. Okay, well, what could this possibly be? And then you see the absolute, you see the legit headline, Florida man sues Dunkin' Donuts over toilet explosion. Well, says he was injured in an explosion. This is Winter Park, Florida. He's suing the Dunkin' Donuts after he suffered from a toilet explosion 2 years ago. It said he was visiting Dunkin' Donuts along Aloma Avenue in Winter Park. This was in 2022. He's had a long time to, you know, let it obviously fester. While he was at Dunkin' Donuts, a toilet in the men's bathroom exploded, covering the bathroom and him in human feces and urine. Court records show that he then ran out of the bathroom asking employees to help for cleaning. Around this time, the employees told him they were aware of the problem with the toilet due to prior incidents. And now his lawyers are saying he requires mental health care and counseling as a direct result of the trauma he experienced in the restroom at Dunkin' Donuts and from the continuing trauma following the event. He's seeking damages of over $50,000, which actually I think, you know, given what he's alleging, maybe that's not enough. But he's accusing Dunkin' Donuts of negligence, failing to properly maintain the toilet and warn him ahead of time. All right. It does not explain anywhere in this article exactly how said toilet exploded. Was it inert at the time? Was he flushing? What's going on? Because normally, yeah, under normal circumstances, you don't walk into the restroom and suddenly the toilet, you know, explodes. So I'd like to understand exactly how that happened. So what else do we have? Maryland driver dead after playing deer pong. Oh, man. You know, I'm not sure I understand deer. Not that we really understand any animals when you get right down to them. But in the case of deer, cars have been around now for well over 100 years. And you'd think that by now the deer would learn rather than, in fact, do things that are tremendously suicidal. Yeah, it's as if they're laying in wait for you. Well, apparently, a driver on Maryland Route 6 near Port Tobacco Road struck a deer that went flying into another vehicle, killing the driver. And so you're saying, all right, what's the deal? So a Nissan Altima driven by a 50-year-old Waldorf woman was traveling eastbound when a deer ran into its path and was struck. The deer became airborne and collided with a Toyota Tundra traveling westbound, according to authorities. It crashed through the vehicle's passenger side, struck the driver, and killed 63-year-old Gregory Gauvin of Welcome, Maryland. The deer then exited out of the rear window of the Toyota and apparently survived. Gauvin traveled off the roadway, struck trees along the side, pronounced dead at the scene. So that's, I guess that's deer pong. I don't know. But I'm telling you, they're suicidal. They are absolutely laying a wait for you. So now what do we have? What do we have out of, again, the neat thing about FARC, and I was unaware of the site entirely, so we thank Bob in Master Control for telling me about this. And apparently the deal on FARC, and I haven't really gotten much into the history of this or that, is that you take a story and you come up with your own headline. And like the foolproof method to get out of jury duty, yeah. So this is a story apparently out of the Sun. Sorry, Iran, it wasn't the great Satan or Israel. It is ISIS that is responsible for the bomb attack. All right. Well, what's this about? That actually might be a legitimate headline. I don't know. But yeah, ISIS is claiming responsibility. You're probably listening to WGN earlier and heard that on the news. So that's a horrible story. We'll leave that right there. 103 dead. Yeah, I know. The world's just gone nuts. Okay, so what do we have? First, Steamboat Willie enters public domain. Now this. Binny, the Disney day drinker's dumpster mascot, gets exiled. Well, now I know that the original Mickey Mouse went public domain, and I'm not sure that that really matters much anymore. I don't think he's going to be an action figure, but Disney Day Drinkers Club outraged over trash bin mascot moved. Yes, apparently there is a Disney Day Drinkers Club. All right, right there, you really wonder. The club is known as D3 for Disney Day Drinkers, yes, and intended for adults who drink at Disney World bars. Which, by the way, that part I can understand perfectly. Never been to Disney World myself, not going, but if I did, I think I'd want to take up drinking. So, they apparently deemed Binny their mascot in 2021 when a Roman Catholic priest blessed a nondescript trash bin as the club's official mascot. I don't know why the priest blessed the trash bin, but so now the trash bin known as Binny is the mascot, and there are 85,000 members on Facebook, apparently, which... not bad. And bars at Disney have offered members secret menu items. But apparently Disney moved the bin to a new location in the park in September, which caused Facebook group to just explode. And in December, Disney moved the bin back to its original location. But soon after, it was moved again. Binny is on the move. So Skip Scher, who founded the D3 Club, said that the parks bring back childhood memories that's really magical as an adult, especially when you introduce a few cocktails. Yeah, right. And apparently, Binny just sets the tone. So I guess Binny is in its new location for the moment. 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. Maybe we'll do the history of rum and Coca-Cola next on WGN Radio.
Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
Oh, beat it, man.
Yankee come to Trinidad, they got the young girls all going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice, make Trinidad like paradise. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
From Chickachickery to Mona's Isle, native girls all dance and smile. Help soldier celebrate his leave, make every day like New Year's Eve.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
WGN Radio. I'm Molly James. Well, there it is, recorded in 1944, October of 44, at Decca in New York. It was believed that this Calypso song was actually written by Maury Amsterdam. I am not making that up. Maury Amsterdam was the lyricist, and Jerry Sullivan and Paul Barone were the composers. And the Andrews sisters, for their part, were just having it thrown in at the end of a session. And so, here is the truth. Lloyd Invader wrote it, and if you're at all familiar with Jamaican music, you know Lord Invader, and that was the lyrics, and the melody was Lionel Belasco, and so it was released in the United States with the Andrews Sisters thinking that this was a Maury Amsterdam record, and it was essentially the exact same record. There was only a minor change, well, two minor changes, and the changes were a couple changes in words. One is that Lord Invader was nothing if not a social commentarian. And so there absolutely in his version is a certain amount of social commentary about things. Now, that said, the other thing is one of the things that was very abhorrent to a lot of people in Jamaica was that the servicemen would come here with their dollars and the girls were prostituting themselves. And so, like, for instance, the line, saw the Yankees treat them nice. The line that came after it in Lord Invader's version was, they give them a better price. And, of course, in the Andrews Sisters, make Trinidad like paradise. Well, the Andrews Sisters never really thought about this one way or another. Patty had talked about it, saying, you know, the night before the recording date, we need another song, and we hardly knew it. We had some extra time. And what was really weird is there was no background arrangement, nothing to put it together. They just faked it. And in under 10 minutes, they made a record that sold 7 million units. It was number one for 7 weeks. And what the Andrews Sisters liked about it, Maxine, I talked about this, was the rhythm. They never really thought about the lyric, and they didn't think about what it meant, if anything. And so the deal was some stations refused to play the song because it mentioned rum and alcohol, but nobody refused to, and others because it mentioned Coca-Cola, but nobody refused because, of course, it was talking about prostitution. Now, as far as believing that Maury Amsterdam wrote it, it's not completely over-the-top crazy because there were a number of comedians in the 40s who had been songwriters, certainly lyrics and nothing else. Phil Silvers and Joey Bishop and Jackie Gleason all had part writer credits. And so here you have Maury Amsterdam, so why not? Well, why not, of course, is he did not write it. He swears he never heard the Lord Invader version. That's kind of like like the Coasters claiming they absolutely never heard Shopping for Clothes when Ken Harris did it, right? Okay, so meanwhile, Lord Invader thinks, you know, I should go to court. He was successful. Now, partially, we should say. In 1948, after years of litigation, both sides won. Lord Invader got the copyright money, the royalties. He got $150,000. And Maury Amsterdam got to keep the writer's credits. So we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that, of course, is Skeeter Davis. That's a Carole King, Jerry Goffin composition that Chet Atkins produced for RCA in 1963. And Skeeter would have turned 92 last Saturday, born in 1931 in Dry Ridge and died in 2004 in Nashville. Sadly, cancer, 72 years old. All right, so Skeeter. Now, we made a discovery here simultaneously. I decided to check email, and several of you, at least a dozen, wrote to say, well, I'm not calling because the calls are just going to voicemail. And at the same time, I had said to John, you know, it's been about 90 minutes. You might want to check the phone. And he came in here somewhat ashen-faced and said, it's going to voicemail. I said, then undo that. And he did, and suddenly the flurry of calls came in. So I didn't think about it earlier because, you know, I'm used to talking to myself, and if I have to do that for 3 hours, well, by God, I will. But it occurred to me that, no, you know, somebody might have had something to say, at least about the Beatles. They might have come up with some theory that clearly I'm not thinking of, and I think Jay in Palatine did. So hello, Jay. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, thank you, and Happy New Year.
Yes, you too.
Your show is always engaging and a font of pop cultural information, so thank you for that.
My pleasure. So what do you think?
If I can mention two things. First, you were talking about promotion of the Beatles and why I Want to Hold Your Hand hit and Please Please Me didn't. And this comes from assorted books on the Beatles and the Beach Boys. As you'll recall, in the fall of 1963, the Beach Boys were beginning to happen on Capitol Records.
Yes, but not to a great degree. No number one records. Between 62 when they released Surfin' that got to number 76, and the Beatles, they had a couple of things in the top 10, but they're still not much. But okay, go on.
Well, a quick footnote on the Beach Boys. You'll recall in the summer of 63, Brian Wilson co-wrote and participated in the recording of Surf City.
Oh, yes, no, well aware, but you're still not talking about the level that you would need to explain this.
Well, track with me for 1 second, only because I first stumbled across this in a book on the Beach Boys long, long ago.
Yeah, reason I'm kind of already saying no, I don't think so, is I've heard this several times, and I'm just not going there. But okay, so we'll say that Surf City, which was number one for 2 years, in 2 weeks, I'm sorry, it just seemed like 2 years, in June of 63. Go on.
Anyway, that fall, because of the Beatles' success in Europe, and as you pointed out, when Capitol elected to direct more promotional money to them, With the Beatles was released in England on the weekend of the Kennedy assassination. The single, I Want to Hold Your Hand, arrived here a couple weeks later. Capitol was finally putting money behind that band. That led to the incredibly quick ascent of the Beatles. And two minor things. The morning of the Kennedy assassination, on the CBS Morning News, their London-based correspondent, Alexander Kendrick, had a black-and-white feature on this new pop sensation out of England called the Beatles.
Right. Huntley Brinkley did, too. But again, kids don't usually watch that. But that's aware.
You're totally correct, because the Huntley Brinkley thing aired that Tuesday prior to the Kennedy assassination.
But neither would interest kids. And yes, I'm aware that there were some promotional dollars, but this is still disproportionate to any of that. And again, if Please Please Me hadn't have gotten airplay in Chicago, and again, we're not talking about why didn't it become a big hit, but I mean, it was an absolute dud. No one reacted to that. And the same thing when Murray the K played stuff in New York. It was virtually no reaction. Well, yeah, you can buy excitement to a degree with promotion, but not to that degree. So what changed?
May I add something else?
Yes.
I was in fifth grade that winter.
Okay.
But I had two older brothers who were in high school, so they were very much in the mainstream of anything promotional money. In downtown Arlington Heights, there was a place called the Arlington Record Shop.
Uh-huh.
Big teen hangout. You could go in and listen to records. I was too young to go in there. They received Beatle buttons, what would then pass for small Beatle posters, et cetera, et cetera. So every kid in town had one of these, and this is 4 or 5 weeks before the first Ed Sullivan appearance, which, as you know, is Sunday, February 9th.
Ninth, right.
The
stuff you're talking about did not come out with I Want to Hold Your Hand, which was released on December 26th of 63. It came out with Meet the Beatles that came a few weeks later. And
I beg to differ, only predicated on this very specific recall. The first Beatle record in my household, and again, this is mother, father, three boys. One of my brothers bought the single, I Want to Hold Your Hand, back with I Saw Her Standing There. On both sides of the record sleeve, and again, it's a 45, was a photo of the four boys in the classic Beatle suit without the collar.
Right.
And one was draped over a chair looking backwards. The other three surrounded him.
Right.
When my brothers weren't home, I could sneak in their room and play that single. And the only thing I had to look at was that 45 record sleeve.
Oh, yeah, the sleeve was absolutely there.
But that, Raleigh, what I'm saying, at the same time they could purchase that record, they could also suddenly have a Beatle button. They could have a Beatle poster. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, January of 64. Because one final addendum, and you'll remember this, when Jack Parr left the Monday through Friday nighttime show,
he had
a Friday primetime show on NBC. He was so determined to scoop Ed Sullivan in any way, on the first Friday night in January of 64, he aired a soundless black-and-white clip that lasted about 3.5 minutes of this new pop sensation from England, the Beatles.
I'm still saying, no kid, again, I understand that, but no kid is going to be affected by that. I don't believe.
Now, Raleigh, again, if I can, and I'm going to take the other side quite respectfully, I was only 10 years old. That was the first time I saw the Beatles, ironically, was the morning of the Kennedy assassination. It didn't register. The first time it actually registered was being 10 years old on a winter Friday night. My parents have the primetime Jack Parr show on, and here are these four guys with unusual haircuts from England. And that, to me, was the run-up.
And what did that mean to you when you saw that?
I thought, this is very interesting. What does it mean? My brothers, and I don't think on the first Friday in January, my brothers had yet purchased a single. I think that came in the next week or two. But all of a sudden, we're immersed in this buildup. All right, this band is something. This band is something special. And as you said much earlier, the nation was engulfed in such astonishing grief, it was grasping for anything. And I think especially the younger generation, which was quietly traumatized by the Kennedy murder, because, you know, how do you react? Kennedy had become a downright patriarchal figure in our living rooms via TV. Suddenly he's murdered. It's very difficult when your age is 10 to 17 to completely grasp that. So here was the first sign of fresh life. Life will go on. There's an alternative to the way everything has been happening in this country. Mm-hmm. And then it all crescendos on Sunday night, February 9th. Again, as I know you well recall, there they were. And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, I don't know. I still say that Please Please Me didn't cause anyone to be interested in that record when Biondi played it on WLS, which was the number one station in Chicago. No one. Couldn't get any traction to save its soul. And here comes I Want to Hold Your Hand, and you know, it's a sociological phenomenon. For all I know, you might be onto something with the timber of the society and the Kennedy administration and all that. But promotional dollars alone didn't do this. Not saying they hurt, but they didn't do it.
Riley, one other thing that I believe you mentioned when you were talking about Biondi playing that tune. Biondi had a personal relationship with the primary promo guy from VJ Records.
Of course.
He's the one who handed him that record.
Of course.
Was that February or March of 63? And Biondi played it, and it was a band from England. And Please Please Me, you know, a British single, February, March, 1963, fine. Nothing earth-shaking. And VJ had, compared to Capitol, had no promotional money whatsoever. That was so coincidental that VJ was Chicago-based, and Biondi, and he was only here for, you correct me if I'm wrong, he was only here for about 4 years. He came in for Buffalo in 1960, and I think he was gone to California by 64.
Well, and he was back again, but Biondi was inarguably big at the time. A lot of kids listen to Biondi. So what I'm saying is that was heard in a major market, and none of these kids reacted to it as if they wanted it. And you're right, he played it, and we know why he played it, is most likely, but played it quite a bit, and it got absolutely no traction. Same thing with Murray the K in New York. The records got no traction. Of course, it's interesting you mentioned VJ, which, of course, was Tolly in this case. They actually sued Capitol when Capitol brought out Meet the Beatles because, of course, on Meet the Beatles was I Want to Hold Your Hand. I Saw Her Standing There. And technically, because EMI hadn't taken back that Beatles contract when they took back Frank Ifield, Tolly had the rights to I Saw Her Standing There.
Tolly had the rights to that. VJ had the right.
Well, that is VJ. No, that is VJ. Tolly is VJ.
And then another label, and I believe they were Philadelphia-based.
Swan. Well, Swan had She Loves You, of course. No, we know all that. But what I'm saying, you know, nobody sued over She Loves You. Swan had She Loves You. And
I'm only laughing because you said we all knew all that.
Yeah.
You and I know that. I would say 90% of the people in America right now could not readily recall that fact.
Oh, I would
you
think
and
that.
I can't.
Well, I can also tell you what MGM had, and God, I wanted awful, my Bonnie and all that crap. But so, yeah, I'm aware of who had what to whom, but it still doesn't make sense to me. Now, maybe you've hit on something in terms of the sociology of the nation at that time, but maybe that's the X factor. But there is an X factor. Promotional dollars alone did not do this.
What would you suggest the X factor
is? I don't know. This is something that I have talked about since the latter 60s. I don't know. But what I do know for fact positive, that this was not just EMI threw some promotional dollars at their subsidiary capital. No, it was...
Okay. Can I raise one point? It was, from the afternoon Kennedy was murdered until the Beatles on Ed Sullivan was a span of 79 days. 11 weeks plus 2 days. As I told you, I was in fifth grade, and my presumption would be you were of an age to remember things that winter.
Yeah.
What was your mood that winter until the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan?
Had nothing to do with any of that. I was much more concerned with what was going on in South America and other stuff. So I had a lot of things happening in 63 that had nothing to do with music and had everything to do with personal assets. So
personal things.
Well, the sale of Estatex, the company I owned there. Anyway, it was a long, long, long story. Things that had nothing to do with music. So my mood had nothing to do with whether Kennedy was shot or not. By the way, I do recall thinking, isn't it interesting that Americans find it almost incomprehensible that a president can get shot? Because, of course, in South America, fairly routine. So,
well, that was on the night of the assassination on NBC. That was the classic commentary Edwin Newman delivered that's available on YouTube.
Well,
essentially saying that not only are we a profoundly diminished nation tonight, we look like a banana republic.
Well, that's right. And so that was not unusual. But anyway, my mind at that point in time, and I remember very well where my mind was with that, had nothing to do with whether I was hearing the Beatles on American radio.
From my half-cooked 10-year-old mind that winter, all I remember is the unspoken but extraordinary somberness of that winter. America was looking for something, because we had a very odd man in the White House all of a sudden, very different what we had become accustomed to in the 34 months of the Kennedy presidency. We had the Panama Canal Zone crisis, which was a source of constant TV news bulletins. We had the second coup in Vietnam that people don't remember, came 2.5 months after the first coup. All of a sudden, we have these four fresh-faced guys with a tremendous rock and roll sound. We had diversion and distraction.
Now, that's interesting. And as I say, I can almost buy this. I don't buy the promotional dollars for in any way, shape, or form. But in terms of, that's what I'm saying, what was it about the timbre of the country? Now the question would become, and I don't know if anybody's really done sociological studies, but to what impact did that really have to the average 12-year-old? You know, like you mentioned, the Panama Canal, and yes, I was acutely aware of that at the time, but how many, and the riots actually were 64. They started right about the time, that was the Zonians. I think it was like January 9th, and so I remember that, but I don't think any kids really factored the Panama Canal.
But here, again, I'm framing everything through my 10-year-old mind, and at night I did one of three things. I did my homework, I played with my baseball and football cards, or I watched TV. So watching TV, you couldn't get around news bulletins, the latest news bulletin from the Panama Canal Zone, news bulletins about the second coup in Vietnam. All of this, somberness, that's what I'm saying. And again, your parents are trying to shield you from that. But, you know, 10-year-olds have a reasonable degree of intuitiveness. So you're sitting there thinking, this is a really odd winter. And then all of a sudden, here, we go from funereal, somber, to happy, happy. Here for three Sunday nights are the Beatles. What band played the next two Sunday nights on the Ed Sullivan Show? Pop band, British Invasion.
Oh, hell, you got the wrong person. I never watched this stuff.
The Dave Clark Five.
Okay. Oh, God. Well, and I talk about boys most unlikely, but of course, after the Beatles hit, everybody in America was falling over themselves to sign British acts all of a sudden. And that was an interesting time, too. But maybe you've hit something on that. I won't debate that because I don't know. It's interesting perspective, but I know it wasn't the promotional dollars for Capitol Records. But
Raleigh, your position would be the Beatles would have become the instant phenomenon they did without promotion.
Oh, no, that is not my position by any degree. What I'm saying is...
That's what you just said.
No. I said that wasn't a factor in terms of how it exploded. There's a big difference. Promotional dollars will buy you only so much. Promotional dollars will never create Taylor Swift, all right, to talk in current terms. It's bigger than that. Promotional dollars will help you, but they certainly won't create a phenomena. If they did, we'd see a lot more phenomena. Promotional dollars are very helpful. Let's put it this way. I'll call it necessary, but not sufficient.
But what you also pointed out with tremendous texture and sophistication is the fact that by the time I Want to Hold Your Hand hit America as a single set to explode, the Beatles, unusually, had a very significant of back recordings set to be released immediately.
Oh, of course.
This wasn't a band that had, like, so many American pop acts of the time, like Paul and Paula being the classic. They hadn't gone in a recording studio, got very lucky with one song, and then had to sit there thinking, what do we do to follow this?
Oh, no, of course. There's no comparison to that of records that were produced for $25 at LaCam Studios in Fort Worth. No. believe me, I got that. And the Beatles did one thing. You know, I'm not a fan of their latter music. I like their really early stuff when they were kind of parroting our R&B. But there's one thing I will say about the Beatles. And when people say, what was the influence of the Beatles that mattered? To me, it wasn't the music. Didn't like them, didn't care, whatever. But the Beatles changed music in that suddenly top 40 buyers, rock and roll buyers, bought albums. Prior to the Beatles, you have the number one single, it's a 45. The number one album is the theme from South Pacific. And so the Beatles brought big money into the record industry. And that was because of the sale of albums. No doubt about that.
Couldn't agree with you more. And the addendum I would throw into what you just said, when my brothers brought the first two albums in, which was Meet the Beatles and Introducing mm-hmm. the Beatles, again, they'd be out of the house. I'm playing their records in their room. I'm looking then at songwriting credits, not knowing that much, other than Lennon McCartney, William Robinson. Okay, right. Who's William Robinson?
All right.
Well, Smokey. Larry Williams. Who's Larry Williams?
No, I know. Absolutely. They repackaged R&B. No doubt about that. Arthur Alexander and on you can go on. Yes, because that was their love originally, was repackaging our stuff. So absolutely. You've ended the night pretty much, I hate to say, but I hope you'll call me again.
Raleigh, it's wonderful talking to you, and I love your show.
Great to hear from you. Thanks, Jay. All right,
Thank you. Now,
here's the thing. For an hour and a half, I'm talking to myself because the phones aren't working, and now Valerie, Karen, Eduardo, Andrew, and Gary have called, not to mention Jay. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I've got about a minute and a half, and that's it, so no bumper, and let's see, a minute and a half and six people? I can't do that math. I don't even want to think about it. So let's see. Eduardo is in Tampa. You're the lucky caller. What's up, Eduardo?
Yeah, I got an article here. Gary Rappaport, he's the grandson of Meyer Lansky.
Uh-huh.
He has got 15 boxes of photos, so he's sending that over to the Mob Museum in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, call next week.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, call next week. We can talk about Meyer Lansky.
Definitely. Okay.
Looking forward to it.
Have a good weekend.
All right. Yeah. Died in Miami Beach. And I got plenty of Meyer Lansky stories. All right. So let's see. What do we have? Can we get a couple more people in there in the waning seconds? Well, let's see what Gary in Austin has to say. Gary. Well, he has to say nothing. He hung up. All right. So that's all right. We have next week. Let's see. We've got Karen in Chicago. You there, Karen? No, probably everybody has abandoned me is what's happened here, because you thought that nobody was going to be, nobody was going to be heard. So with that in mind, next week, Monday night, there is a full Monday night trivia. That's right, starting at 10, the Central Time, right here. Tuesday, there's a slightly abbreviated show. I'll tell you more about it Monday night, and the rest of the week will be full shows. So until then, that's a wrap. We thank Bob for keeping us on the air tonight and for keeping me company. I thank you for calling, even though you couldn't get through. I thank John for screening. I do not thank our phone system. Yes, but nonetheless, good that you tried. Good to know. I'm going to go recover now. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.